There we go. All right. Welcome to the poetry show, broadcasting on Enlighten Radio. You can get to Enlighten Radio. It's an internet radio station, broadcasting almost 24/7 at www.enlightenradio.org. The Enlighten Radio is all one word. And there's a play that website is a blog, and there's a player on the top of the page if you're on anything tablet sized or bigger. If you're on your cell phone, probably want to go to player.enlightenradio.org. It shows up better on smaller phones. So anyway. And we're broadcasting here normally at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays, but this morning we're doing it a little early because of appointments that our senior broadcasters occasionally have. So then we're going to, once again, Janet has picked out a really great poet that I don't know how famous he is, but she's done him before on our program, and he's consistently good and occasionally just really great. Stephen Dunn is his name, and I think we have a few poems today to share with you and with each other here. Maybe Janet has some other introductory bio info.
Yes, I have a little bit of bio information about Stephen Dunn. Died last few years of complication of Parkinson's disease. Oh shoot, my little thing just disappeared. Come back. Here we go. Stephen Dunn was born in Forest Hills, New Jersey in 1939. He earned a bachelor's degree in arts from Hofstra University. His first job after college was writing advertising copy. Although he kept getting promoted, he felt he was living a soulless life. Therefore, he quit when he was 27 years old, and he went to Spain intending to write a novel. Instead, he discovered he was better at writing poetry. He then went to graduate school at Syracuse University, earning an MA in creative writing. His first full-length collection, Looking for Holes in the Ceiling, was published in 1974. His 11th book of poetry, Different Hours, won the Pulitzer Prize in 2001. He taught creative writing at Richard Stockton College in New Jersey. The illusion of good writing, he states, is that something might seem effortless, seamless, which may once have had many disparate parts. Indeed, his writing is often described as graceful, conversational, and intelligent. His measure of a successful poem is that he must startle himself. So I'm going to begin by reading a poem that was actually not by him, but was a tribute to him by R.G. Evans. And just give me a moment and I will find it. Poetic Closure, it's called. My iPad's being pokey this morning, sorry.
No, that's okay.
Poetic Closure. This was published in Rattle Magazine, which is a fabulous poetry magazine if you're ever interested in finding poetry magazines. Poetic Closure by R.G. Evans. And it's in memory of Stephen Dunn. From the title on, the poet said, you set up a series of expectations within the reader. Then you either fulfill or subvert them. Poets in ancient China believed the words stop, but the poem goes on, like a canoe, its paddles lifted from the water. So it is with certain lives. We live here in their wake, expecting the ripples will never end, subverted each time they do. Poetic closure consists of reminders of where the words have been, where they will return, and the click at the end, like a lid lowered into place. A sound we expect that still leaves us breathless when one word's end, but we go on.
Amen.
So that was a tribute to Stephen Dunn. I thought it was a lovely tribute. Oh,
wonderful. Yeah.
I particularly like the image, the word, the poets in ancient China believe the word stop, but the palm goes on like a canoe, its paddles.
Right. I know. you carry them with you. Imagine in more ancient times where, written traditions were still emerging, right, in most cultures, where they later started to prosper. But you had oral traditions. How else could something like the Iliad have been passed down, actually, and composed? And so, and then I was, when we were in Iceland, we were informed about the role of sagas, which were around for a long time before they were written down, which in some cases was fairly late. I think it's really interesting where you see the, the transitions from oral to written stories, okay, and narratives, because they have such a the oral ones have such a collective sense. I mean, they're like a song that everybody knows, right? That kind of thing.
Yes, but poetry, one of the people say about free verse, what makes it poetry? Well, the music and the compression makes it poetry. And you have to hear poems aloud to really appreciate their full grandeur. I mean, some of them have like particular forms that they have to look at them on the page, but you still, poetry is meant to be read aloud.
Well, okay. So in that sense, it retains that part of that link with the past, right?
That's yes. I think it's totally severed.
Right.
In Iceland, poetry is very big. In the long winters, they get together and read poetry to each other.
Well, why not? Okay.
There's a lot of poetry written in Iceland.
I mean, it was hard to find. I mean, apparently Iceland was one of the places that native peoples did not find themselves until relatively late in migrations across the north. So it's 750 miles from the coast of Greenland. So it's a swim to get there. And apparently the currents are powerful. On both sides of the island, one going south being cold, and the other, the Gulf Stream, on the other side going north or northwest, northeast. So it was pretty isolated. Nonetheless, it's doing pretty well now. So do you want to do Here and Now?
Yeah, I'll do Here and Now. This is the first poem we're doing by Stephen Dunn. It's for Barbara. And I'm not sure who Barbara is. I think Barbara might be his wife, but I'm not sure. But anyhow, it's got a dedication. It's called Here and Now. And it's got this great, powerfully provocative opening sentence. There are words I've had to save myself from, like my Lord and Blessed Mother. Words I said but never meant, though I admit a part of me misses the ornamental stateliness of high mass, that smell of incense. Heaven did exist, I discovered, but was reciprocal and momentary, like lust felt at exactly the same time. Two mortals, say, on a resilient bed, making a small case for themselves. You and I became the words I'd say before I lay me down to sleep, and again when I'd wake. Wishful words, no belief in them yet. It seemed you'd been put to the earth to distract me from what was doctrinal and dry. Electricity might start things, but if they're to last, I've come to understand a steady voltage hum of affection must be arrived at. How else to offset the occasional slide to neglect and ill temper? I learned in time to let heaven go its smithy way, to never again be a supplicant of any single idea. For you and me, it's here and now from here on in. Nothing can save us, nor do we wish to be saved. Let night come with its austere grandeur, ancient superstitions and fears. It can do us no harm. We'll put some music on, open the curtains, let things darken as they will.
Wow.
I thought that was a lovely tribute to a relationship.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's reminiscent of Jane Kenyon's poem, isn't
yes.
it?
Oh, yes. Yes, let night come. It's I don't know whether it's before or after let evening
similar,
come.
Similar tone, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. I thought that the parts of that are just the thing about from you and me, it's here and now from here on in. Nothing can save us, nor do we wish to be saved. I like that. You know,
yeah,
I'm comfortable with that for sure. it's a very nice it's a love poem. It is.
Yes, I also like this passage. Electricity might start things, but if they're to last, I come to understand a steady low voltage hum of affection must be arrived at. I thought that was right. Very insightful. You know, sure. You have the initial sparks right. When you're first getting to know somebody, but really you need to settle into that steady low voltage hum if you're going to have a long-term relationship.
Right. You know, right. Too much voltage will electrocute. Also, you know, sometimes the wires can't handle it. Anyway, well, I think it's a beautiful here and now. Wow, good for any occasion. Not just a birthday poem or an anniversary poem or wow. It sounds like a person that was married a long time. Is that true or
I think he was, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I was when I was reading that one, which was the one I sort of hooked on when you sent me, I noticed right below it that this other poem called Glimpses. Was linked underneath it, and
yes.
And I really like this one, and like you say, the conversational tone is beguiling.
Yeah, you know, but then there's these profound insights buried in them.
Yeah, right. I know, it's really cool. Anyway, so let me read that one. It's the last few hours of a county fair. More than ninth inning, score tied. In a small town, high school, big game. Everything that's going to happen, destined to feel inevitable. Everett's favorite cow is yet to win a prize. And what occurs next on the field will likely determine whether a certain boy, years later, will run for mayor or still be known as the guy who dropped the ball. Elsewhere in the same town, Pastor William is writing down his sermon on what it takes to live a moral life, confusing rectitude with deprivation, and his wife's frequent, unapologetic, nothing for you tonight, dear. Tomorrow, no doubt, because this happens in towns both large and small. Seventh grade Joshua, who knows the answer, but won't go to the chalkboard because he has a hard on, is thought to be dumb. That is, until he proves he's not. The answer written down in code for Mr. Zinner to see, perhaps to understand. Sharon is the beauty, is also smart, and her pet pig wins best in class, but she won't accept the award. The family needs money, but the prize is given to the DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution. And she wants to take a stand. It seems inevitable that in a town this size, Joshua and Sharon will marry. But she goes to a faraway college and meets Nathaniel, a city boy who knows nothing about pigs, but something about integrity. They fall in love. And the rest, as they say, is history. Babies and hardship, grad school, and in her case, visits to the now curious place that was home. Joshua working the counter at Beale's Hardware. Thursday night bingo at the church. How things could have been had she not become someone else. I love that poem.
Reminds me a little of Spoon River Anthology, all the stories about the small town.
Right. Yeah, it's got a little our town quality to it. Yeah.
A
little bit. Yeah. Yeah, like a New England small town, that would be, it would work. Those kind of little stories. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I went to college the first time. There was a very famous preacher that gave a sermon for the students. And his first sermon, it was a two-part sermon. He gave it in two successive Sundays. The first part was, you can't go home again. And the second part was, you have to go home again. And it was really, and that's just what this poem reminds me of. You can't go home again, but you have to go home again.
Right. Well, it's, it became such a parable of so many American lives that you would leave home and in increasing numbers never return, at least not permanently. And it was so traumatic for American families that, you know, industrialization and the retreat of farming, at least as far as what most people were doing for work, changed everything. In terms of family life, and especially generations. I mean, just hardly any comparison. You know, although there's obviously places where that's still the case, but it's hard to see now. You think about you remember for example, the situation comedies of the early 60s or late 50s. How they were the culture that things were coming out of, you know, but looking back still backwards too, you know, you think things like the Andy Griffith Show or you can just think all kinds of things of scenarios where the family was an extended one, usually, right? And in loco, you know, everybody's in the same place, and it's started to change as things went along. But you could, and it was considered ideal too. How could you have had Lassie in the city? I don't think you could.
True. Timmy would never weld the fold down.
I mean, is my sister-in-law Melanie going to, you know, move to New York City and raise collies? It's just hard, you know, really hard. So probably not. Anyway, Glimpses. I just thought it was great. I just dug the hell out of the poem. Did you have another one?
I wanted to end with Happiness, which is really short, but since we have time, maybe I'll read why I think I'm going to be, why I think I'm a writer, which is kind of a humorous poem. And again, this is sort of like from the title on, he says, you either fulfill or subvert it. This is a poem where it starts out, the title is Why I Think I'm a Writer, but the poem doesn't really talk about writing.
Yes.
So it kind of subverts
some sense
it,
in that.
Like she says in the introductory poem, Why I Think I'm a Writer. God was listening, but even so, I never told the truth in confession. If I'd stolen candy from Woolworths, I'd say I took the Lord's name in vain 11 times, Father, since my last confession. If I'd been good, I'd say I took the Lord's name 6 or 7 times. I knew the priest depended on sins to feel good about his job. But most of all, I wanted to get back to the religion of the schoolyard as fast as possible, to the epiphanous spin that moves off the post and soft reverse layups. I never properly did penance at the altar. 2 Hail Marys instead of 4, a fast Our Father, maybe half an act of contrition or Apostles' Creed. I don't know why I was never afraid.
Yeah. Sure he does. He knows now. Anyway, that's true. You know, how many people walk around in fear of God striking them down?
Yes, and he doesn't.
Even
as a child, he sort of he didn't take it to heart the way some people do.
Right. That they're, because you know, you fear there's going to be a price paid, either in personal disapproval. All your friends are, all your associates, all your colleagues, all your community shuns you because you made a mistake according to somebody's rules. You know, kind of poem I'm looking for today is probably not a Stephen Dunn style poem, because I was listening to the news broadcast you know, yesterday and today about the unbelievable tragedy in Israel. Well, not so unbelievable, but still just horrendous. And there's a certain kind of art that tries to reach for and to embrace, you know, the full tragedy of, you know, warfare. And, you know, the destiny of our world, you know, after all these centuries, still, you know, challenged by the worst. And how, so when I think about that, for example, I sometimes think about poets like, like Shakespeare or Milton. I sometimes think of Milton somehow, you know, poems that thread their way from heaven to hell and back again seem, you know, appropriate for the scourges that make the kind of conversation with nature, for example, that or with each other that is, or intimacies, you know, seem more brittle in that kind of a time. I'm not sure. Anyway, that's just a thought I had when I was thinking about how much I like this poem. And yet, it didn't quite soothe the spirit much.
Yeah. But it's very, you know, it's very hard with world events weighing so heavily on everyone's heart, you know, not just Israel, but other world events. But right. One of the things that I was told once was that you can't let them take your joy. You know, you have to hold on to joy. And that in times like this, joy is almost a subversive act. And that was given to me, that bit of wisdom was given to me after a certain election back in 2016.
Right. Right.
So the last poem is not about joy, but it's about happiness. It's actually my favorite poem in the set. It's a very short poem by Stephen Dunn. Very imagistic. Just sit. I might read it twice because it's short. Happiness. A state you must dare not enter with hopes of staying. Quicksand in the marshes and all the roads leading to a castle that doesn't exist. But there it is, as promised, with its perfect bridge above the crocodiles, its doors forever open.
Yeah.
We have to find that bridge above the crocodiles.
What's the title of the poem?
Happiness.
Happiness.
A state you must dare not enter with hopes of staying. Quicksand in the marshes and all the roads leading to a castle that doesn't exist. But there it is, as promised, with its perfect bridge above the crocodiles and its doors forever open. Don't want the crocodiles.
Well, I'm glad to see that happiness is still possible while the crocodiles are still circling. That's
yes.
That's reassuring. It's optimistic. That's good. Anyway, well, that's wonderful. Yeah. Stephen Dunn. Okay. Well, brothers and sisters out there in the our listening community, check out our podcast, by the way, on podcast.enlightenradio.org. And now that I have gotten my automation substantially advanced, I can turn this around in about 30 minutes. So that's a revolution. It's liberating so much of my time. Anyway, I might be able to think about other parts of the programming besides just the production stuff. I think we're back. We're going to be on a little short vacation Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, but we'll be back by next Wednesday. So. We're going to a wedding up in the far north.
I may not be able to do the show next Wednesday, John. I have to do dialysis early.
Okay. Well, just let me know. You know, we can
let you know.
Do something. We'll do something.
Okay. I mean,
yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you, Janet, so much for Stephen Dunn. I just thought it was a real great moment in this day. And maybe it's not entirely relevant to all the struggles of the world, but it might just freshen your spirit for a few minutes this morning as you move through what's likely to be complicated. So take care of each other. Yeah, it's late, but everything comes next.